Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, as a matter of fact, it is a live show. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Friday, the 15th of July. Just in case you thought I was having fun with you there. No, this is live. It is beautiful here in what is left of wild, wonderful, almost level West Bycod, Virginia. And I anticipate we will have ourselves a pretty good time this evening. At least I like to think so. Yeah, okay, so apparently I got to go turn the speaker off on the chat room. All these resets can be just a little bit weird when you're getting... My goodness gracious, I have been away from home. Well, we've managed to work in Friday shows over the course of a period of time that I thought I wouldn't be home at all. But still, when you tally it all up, it's been about a month and a half since I've been home for any extended period of time. Is this not going out? I show that we're sending and streaming. I'm seeing questions in the chat room. Live show today? Oh, okay. So, Sparky, you're getting it? Good. Good, good, good. Okay, waiting for... Okay, we're getting some affirmation there. I live for affirmation. So, anyway, welcome to the program. Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch. And this would be, I'm telling you now, it's coming soon. There's a little bit of work that has to be done, but it will be done in time. And I anticipate somewhere in the fairly near future, we will go from Friday on the Front Porch to Friday in the Front Yard, using some of the technology that we debuted, as it were, during the PRISM. That's PRISM, P-R-I-S-M. The reason I keep spelling it is when I first checked into the hotel down in Princeton, the folks there said, "You're from the prison?" Now, here I am, a professional broadcaster, who, when called upon so to do, can enunciate with the best of them. It makes you feel kind of funny when you say prism, prism. Of course, you and I know what a prism is. It separates the light into the Roy G. Biv color spectrum of visible light. Prism. And in return you get, "You're from the prison?" Yeah. Yeah. Probably a variety of reasons for that, one of which is probably not having the word prism in one's vocabulary, but never mind. It has been, let me just say, a magnificent several weeks. Beginning on June the 29th and going forward until yesterday, it was like, I don't know, it was sort of like academic summer camp with no kumbaya and no guitar playing. There were no leather crafts either, thinking back to my days in Southern Baptist summer camp, but nonetheless, it was a magnificent It was a magnificent period of time. And thanks again on behalf both of Ferg and me, and hopefully on behalf of you, thanks to Dr. Bill for letting the horn be part of that magnificent, magnificent exercise. I will simply say to you that if you missed it, if you thought, oh, I don't want to listen to that, which I'm sure you don't, because that's, you know, that's teabagger talk. I don't want none of that book learning. Avail yourself of the opportunity to engage in this intensive learning process, especially if American government, American history, and American present and future mean anything to you. Everything we did is over at Ustream.tv. Simply go to Ustream.tv and in the search box type in American History Seminar, and by the time you get to Seminar, it'll pop up. Go there. All the videos are there. I especially point you to the following. Bob Bliss, Tom Tierney. No, not everyone had alliterative first and last names. That was not, no. Bob Bliss, Tom Tierney, John Kaminsky, Stanley Cutler, Kevin Shanley, Pete Ballard, God, the list is, there were so many. My God, it was just this parade day in and day out of incredibly intelligent people. Of course, Dr. Bill O'Brien, Professor Keith Lilly, Dr. Carson Holloway. This was a who's who of intelligence. Willis Nordland, David Bard. Truly, truly stunning, stunningly intelligent scholars in their given fields. I mean, I got to sit down and have a nice chat with Stanley Cutler. What a wonderful man he is. You know, it kind of blows you away when you're just sitting across the table having a beer with one of the guys who helped bring down Richard Nixon. One of the people who, in his own life, has struck a great blow for freedom. And he's just as ordinary and jovial and nice and friendly and kind and decent. He comes from Madison, Wisconsin. I think that's part of kind and friendly and decent just seems to go with the turf there. Unless you're, you know, Snotwalker or one of those, Prosser, you know, one of those creeps. But you're sitting there talking to oh my God, it was amazing. And these scholars, I kept asking them the same question. They didn't know it because they were never in the room the same time. Hey, Bob, why are you asking all of us the same question? But I kept asking the same question. Because all of these people had intense familiarity with the creation of the United States of America and with the ratification and passage of the Constitution and its enactment into law, with the various and sundry problems that led up to the Civil War, or what some people down south of the Mason-Dixie line still refer to as the War of Northern Aggression. And I asked them all the same question. This country has withstood a number of crises. Is it possible that the current one we are in may be the one, finally, with which they were ill-suited? to deal. And to a person, each one gave the same answer, which I found interesting. Because, you know, we'd kept them in a soundproof booth off stage so they couldn't hear the questions. To a person, they all answered, that may well be the case. And the reason I ask the question is because no matter how wrong the leadership of the South was, and no matter how evil the intent to maintain slavery was, and make no mistake that it was evil, they were upfront about their intent. One of the nice things coming out of the Prism series was that these scholars put to rest once and for flippin' all the notion that anything else was the cause of the Civil War save slavery. They were upfront about it before the war. In fact, it was such that the attitude toward slavery actually hardened between the ratification of the Constitution and the outbreak of the Civil War. It went from being what was deemed a necessary evil, or Jefferson referring to it as much like riding a wolf. You don't want to be riding the wolf, but you don't dare let go. It went from that to being described as a happy and natural circumstance created and sanctioned by Almighty God. And that's some distance. But even those persons of profound hatred, your John C. Calhouns and Judah Benjamins and Jefferson Davises and Robert Lees and... You know, one of the questions I did not ask, but wish someone had, was, wouldn't it have been better if all the Southern generals and all the Southern politicians who fomented the rebellion had been executed for the traitors that they obviously were? I can't help thinking that something on the order of a Nuremberg-style response to the Civil War would have been far better for all concerned. As it was, by 1870, 1875, you see the development of something called the Lost Cause, which is nothing but an unmitigated line of crap that persists to this day. You know, when issues surrounding the flying of the Confederate flag are brought up, well, we're just honoring our heritage and our sacrifices. If we had executed all those Southern fomenters of rebellion, I don't think people would be quite so eager to fly that hateful piece, that hateful rag. But anyway, I digress. The question that I put to these scholars, I put to them because as I look at the state of the Union today, one thing strikes me more than any other, and it's certainly evident in this so-called debate, this dumb show, this mummery over the debt ceiling. And that is, I don't think that anybody who framed or authored or ratified the Constitution was quite able to conceive that we might someday exist in a time when one half of the debate would be debating entirely from a position of unmitigated ill will. Because the Republican Party and some so-called Democratic enablers are acting in nothing short of ill will. They're not concerned about a deficit. Don't kid yourself. If they were concerned about a deficit, they would have been up in arms with the pitchforks and the torches when their boy, Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney, said, deficits don't matter anymore. Right? They never would have. They never would have countenanced the ongoing rush into War Incorporated, where we presently find ourselves. But they didn't. And yet today, they find themselves in the position of worrying about the deficit and this financial mess that that Negro has got us into. That's another thing. Had we executed the leaders of the Southern Rebellion, I have a feeling the cause of civil rights would not have had to wait until the middle of the 20th century to become reality. There are some people that just can't understand nuance. And nuance is largely lost on the South. Bear in mind, you new listeners, that I say this as a Southerner, born and bred. Like the intro says, the only born and bred Southerner doing liberal talk, progressive talk, whatever we want to call it, conversation. Best thing in the world could have happened would have been to see old Bobby Lee's noble neck getting stretched at the end of a rope. And all his buddies, too. Longstreet. And Bragg. And Hood. And Davis. And Benjamin. All of them. Goodbye now. Because they forfeited, you know, they waged war on the United States. They forfeited their citizenship. Much as John Boehner, much as Eric Cantor, much as Michelle Bachmann, Steve King, and the rest of these filthy right-wingers make plain in this, our so-called modern age, that they too have forfeited the right to call themselves American citizens. Because after all, this whole supposed debate centers on what? Taxation. Steve King, for instance. What a piece of crap he is. Steve King, a congressman from Iowa, who famously remarked that, you know, this would all be so much easier if them homosexuals just wouldn't go on about how they're homosexuals all the time. This dumb bastard has said that he would reject a deal that increased the debt ceiling if that deal contained $3 trillion in cuts, but $8 in tax increases. That is a man who has forfeited any right to call himself an American.
Obviously, any type of deal is very fluid at this point, but in terms of what you would be willing to accept and vote for instance, say there were a deal that had $3 trillion in cuts from, say, you know, just $8 in revenue increases, do you think that's something that you yourself could be supporting?
Say that number again, $3.
If you had, you know, $3 trillion in cuts and $8 in revenue increases...
I'm not for raising taxes, but I won't support anything raising taxes. revenue increases are a euphemism for raising taxes. Closing loopholes is, some one person's loopholes, the other one's legitimate business expense and tax deduction or tax credit, as the case may be. That doesn't get to the root of the problem. Let's send a constitutional amendment to the states for ratification and then start talking business.
And so even if the revenue increases are minuscule, it probably still wouldn't, a road not to go down.
We've been through this before. And, if anybody's real proud of the CR negotiations, they're not talking about it now. I don't want to see that movie again.
Thank you, Congressman King.
Thanks.
Movie? I don't want to see that movie again. Because, you see, when ordinary people who rely on things like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid for their continued existence, when that safety net collapses and goes away, well, that's just a scene in a movie for upstanding, fine Christian Steve King. Getting a little hot out there. And it's about as hot as it was in, 1859, 1860. But those dumb slaveholders were at least arguing in some semblance of goodwill. They were up front with what they were. Well, you can't take away our slaves. We won't be able to sit on the porch and drink mint juleps and watch the overseer whoop them no more if you do that. Not so much with this crowd. Now, granted, Steve King is from Iowa and Michelle Bachman's from Minnesota. And Sarah Palin's from Mars and all these other freaks. But it's the same attitude. Look at there! Look at there! They done got one of them in the White House now and he's gonna rob us blind! Probably try to steal our women folk. Really? I'm not kidding. Ed noting in the chat room, we're the slaves now. Are we giving them three hots and a cot? What they complaining about? Oh, wait a minute, they're not. They want to take away the three hots and the cot, too. We may be in a place, we may be in a hole we can't get out of. But understand that debt has nothing to do with it. Debt is largely a fiction. What we're talking about is an assault on the full faith and credit of the United States. God, I can't implore you strongly enough that you go and watch people like John Kaminsky and Tom Tierney and Stanley Cutler and Kevin Shanley and all those Bob Bliss, because without being in anybody's face whatsoever, they completely demolished every last historical or political talking point that the right wing has. And they didn't do it like I do it, by calling the other side stupid bastards and fascists and traitors, which they are. They did it simply by the use of facts. Unassailable historical facts. When, for instance, you sit down and you read Federalist Number 10, authored by James Madison, and you read this confession, and it is a confession that no matter, because remember George Washington said avoid factionalism, don't set up parties like, you know, the Tories and the whatnots in England, let's all just work together toward the common good. Common good! Dadgum, that Bob Kincaid's out there saying that George Washington was a communist. But a few years later, advocating the ratification of the Constitution, little Jimmy Madison, 5 feet two, all every bit of him, just probably the greatest weight in his body was his brain, because he was brilliant. But in Federalist 10, he punts. He does. He punts. He confesses. He quits. He says, we're going to have faction. And that's okay, as long as they're managed. I'm paraphrasing. As long as we're going forward, but if, with everybody working toward the good of the new nation, we'll be all right. The problem was, and what I'm getting at here, what's important, is that even then there were people who were not working for the good of everyone. I forget who it was that told the story. Might have been Kaminsky, Dr. Kaminsky. Might have been one of the others. But I was absolutely blown away by the story of, and Dr. Bill did some of his graduate work on this as well. You know, we're all wrapped up in the debt ceiling, and how does the United States go about managing its credit? It issues bonds. We're talking about defaulting on bonds. Well, the very first time bonds were issued in the United States, or nearly the first, if I'm mistaken in that, the very first time bonds were issued in the United States, they were issued to veterans from the Revolution. And they were issued in regard to debt incurred by the young United States in the course of prosecuting that revolution. And time passed, and the veterans got older. And eventually it came to be a sort of accepted wisdom that those bonds were, at best, a curiosity, but certainly of little value. Enter Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton would be completely comfortable with the thugs we are dealing with in the present day. He and John Boehner could sit down at sunup and get liquored up as all hell and just be yucking it up by noon. Alexander Hamilton wanted to issue another round of bonds. That's where they'd part company. But, this is where they'd rejoin company, they set it up in such a way that the public out there at large, the you and me's of the era, the late 18th century, didn't know that bond issue was coming. But the insiders did. The oligarchs of their day did. The cronies did. And so they went about the countryside knocking on doors. Got any of them old, you wouldn't have to have any of them old Revolutionary War bonds, would you? You know, those worthless old pieces of trash. Just a bunch of IOUs. Remember when George Bush went to Parkersburg, West Virginia, to the Bureau of the Public Debt and declared that Social Security was merely a filing cabinet full of IOUs? Yeah. So they went door to door. You got any, you don't have any of those old bonds laying around. Oh, you do? You do? You know what? I'm collecting those things. I just thought, I thought I'd wallpaper the house with them. They're useless. They're worthless, you know. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you $100 for yours. $100? $100 to a dirt farmer trying to eke out a living out in the wilds of Maryland? A little bit of walking around money. Sure, you can have it. Money changes hands. A few weeks later, the new bond issue is announced, and the old bonds are bought up with new bonds, which are going to have value. And to hear Dr. Bill tell it, there were about 16 names on that list in the state of Maryland, representing boatloads of those bonds. The money boys had got away with it again. So when you hear, and I guess this is my point, when you hear the for-profit media saying things like, well, this is unprecedented in the history of the United States, we started out broke. The United States of America started out brokered in the Ten Commandments. Poor as Job's turkey. And that was rapidly turned into a means by which the money boys could get rich, rich, rich. Richer. So don't buy it. A couple of weeks ago, our good buddy Albert said, you know, if they don't raise the debt ceiling, the sun will come up tomorrow. The sun will come up, but the question is not whether the universal clockwork will continue. The question is what the sun will come up on. And I submit to you that the sun will rise on a nation in which, once again, as has been largely our historic precedent, and want, with an O, the sun will rise upon a money class that has just gotten some richer. I don't care to go into the whole 11-dimensional chess thing about whether or not Obama played the Republicans and the Republicans look like fools now. They've always looked like fools, but they've often hid it behind layer upon layer of greed. But don't be fooled. Don't be conned. As News Ninja Susan notes, the U.S. defaulted once before during the Carter administration. Carter's voted out of office and Reagan comes in. I remember this, says Susan. Home interest loans were going at 18%. I don't even want to speculate what credit card interest was. Can you imagine what it would be if we defaulted now? Yikes. And what happens when interest rates go up like that? Why, look, the rich people who have all the money get more of the money that they don't have. You know, a great example of how this operates came in a story I saw the other day out of the New York Times. Appalachian Power, which is the company that gets vast quantities of our money here, who has had something on the order of a 100% rate increase over the last 4 years, Appalachian Power has abandoned its carbon capture and storage project at New Haven, West Virginia. It was said to be state of the art. state of the art. It was the best hope of capturing carbon and stuffing it underground under extreme pressure, and hoping that it would that carbon gas would stay there, carbon dioxide. Well, they quit. You know why? Because they said the government wouldn't pay for it or allow them to charge me for it. That's right. This clean coal technology that was supposed to be so important was not important enough for an American corporation to develop it without welfare and without gouging me and several hundred thousand, well, a million and a half other West Virginians. Says something, doesn't it? Now, Appalachian Power has enough money to burn an entire herd of soaking wet elephants and not cut into their officers' ability to have lobster at lunch. But they wouldn't do it. Because, now here's this technology. Now, come on, we all know it's a fraud and a sham, right? There's no such thing as clean coal. Clean coal is a dirty lie. But they hooted and hollered and touted and ballyhooed this thing and offered it up as the next best thing since sliced bread. And now they're going to shutter it. Because they couldn't get permission to pay for this boondoggle with somebody else's money. Now, bear in mind, Appalachian Power is no liberal, not progressive at all. They hate that one. He's a killing jobs. Their press release machine has been going nonstop for about 2 weeks now. The Obama administration EPA is killing jobs by making us have clean air. And yet they just killed the jobs on their carbon capture and storage scam. Because the technology, which in roughly the same odds as I have of winning tonight's Mega Millions drawing, if it had worked, not the same odds, yeah. If it had worked, and they'd been the first to get it, they had patents coming out their gazoos, and they would have made a blind blooming fortune selling carbon capture and storage technology to a grateful world. Good God Almighty, they would have been able to set up a factory in China and just churned them out like Tinker Toys. But they weren't willing to do it without welfare money. You know, when corporate America gets welfare money for something like that, they call it research and development. If you or I get some sort of funding that allows us to continue eating and breathing and living, that's welfare! But they couldn't get welfare, so they took their carbon capture and storage boondoggle and went home. Is it any wonder that we're getting left in the dust by corporations doing their own research and development overseas? Is it any wonder that the leading manufacturers of wind technology are in Spain and Germany and China? Not to me, it's not. So we find ourselves watching a developing story of impending catastrophe. God, I saw it compared to an to that movie where the asteroid was headed toward the Earth today. Really? But the best one of all had to be David Brooks. Now this guy had over at the New York Times, he had a brief moment of sanity in which he called out the Republican Party. For what it's doing with all of these shenanigans, willing to, the big analogy being used, and it will probably make it shortly onto Sandra's list, you know, running us over the cliff. Yeah, that cliff is working toward the list in a hurry. He writes an essay yesterday about a guy who wrote an essay about dying from ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, frequently referred to as Lou Gehrig's disease. And the guy makes the credible argument that he's not going to hang on to life, but when certain benchmarks are passed, he's going to confront death and deal with it. The guy's name is Dudley Clendenin. David Brooks describes his essay as splendid. Splendid. Oh, Muffy, the lobster Newberg was splendid. I hope you had the chance to read and reread Dudley Clendenin's splendid essay, The Good Short Life, in the Times' Sunday Review section. Clendenin is dying of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS. What Clendenin wrote is, when the music stops, when I can't tie my bow tie, tell a funny story, walk my dog, talk with Whitney, kiss someone special, or tap out lines like this, I'll know that life is over and it's time to be gone. Says David Brooks, Clendenin's article is worth reading for the way he defines what life is. Life is not just breathing and existing as a self-enclosed skin bag. It's doing the activities with others you were put on earth to do. Now, in David Brooks's class, you know, we know what those activities are, you know, Sundays at the polo, right. But he takes this essay, which I went and read, and which was impressive. And damned if he doesn't do exactly what you would expect the lobster for lunch crowd to do. Clendenin's article is worth reading for the way he defines what life is. Life is not just breathing and existing. Oh, we did that. It's also valuable as a backdrop to the current budget mess. How morally bankrupt need one be to equate one man's personal existential debate with the scarcely utterable bad faith of a gang of Wall Street sycophants in the Republican Party? But listen to this. If you really want to scream, and I suggest, I did, don't feel bad. Just like close the windows and stuff so nobody will call 911 and think there's an axe murder going on in your house. Well, yeah, that will keep going then. It's also valuable as a backdrop to the current budget mess. This fiscal crisis is about many things, but one of them is our inability to face death, our willingness to spend our nation into bankruptcy to extend life for a few more sickly months. I got there, and I did. I made ugly jungle noises. not, you know, that kind of stuff. Our inability to face death. You elitist prick. Most of America faces it every day in one form or another. Thousands, if not millions, of us face it in the form of any variety of diseases, such as what Mr. Clendenin writes about in his essay. But we have an inability to face it. And from that, he launches into an attack on Medicare. The fiscal crisis is driven largely by health care costs. Really? Really? Health care costs, Dave? Because I could have sworn that this fiscal crisis was driven by some wars of choice in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya and Yemen. Little covert black ops in places like Colombia. Because, you know, those things aren't free. And Afghanistan and Iraq were literally done off the books in the George W. Numbnuts administration. But no, it's sick people's fault. We have the illusion that in spending so much on health care, we're radically improving the quality of our lives. We have the illusion that through advances in medical research, we're in the process of eradicating deadly diseases. We have the barely suppressed hope that someday all this spending and innovation will produce something close to immortality. No, no, you arrogant punk. We have the hope that some of this innovation and technology will prevent us from dying screaming in misery and agony. And utterly destroying the lives of those we leave behind. Brooks notes, our healthcare spending and innovation are not leading us toward a limitless extension of a good life. You know, I can't stand those little 3/4-pound lobsters. I only like the 2.5-pound behemoths. I love it when the claw cracks and you get that whole hunk of luscious lobster. The good life. You know, with a perky little, a little Pinot Grigio, perhaps. You know, when I'm slumming. Otherwise, a nice Chardonnay. And so he spends, David Brooks does, a whole boatload of words explaining that old people are the problem. You know, he earned the ire, David Brooks did, of the Repiglic and Intelligentsia. the Repiglic and Intelligentsia for his brief little moment of sanity in which he called them out for toying around with the financial well-being of the country. And apparently the ire that he earned sent him right back under the yoke. And he felt, having felt their lash on his tender hide, he got back to the business of being a Repiglic, and that is to say, to wit, back to the business of blaming poor people for crap that rich people did. My only point today is that we think the budget mess is a squabble between partisans in Washington. But in large measure, it's about our inability to face death and our willingness as a nation to spend whatever it takes to push it just slightly over the horizon. He's talking about nursing homes. He's talking about hip replacements. He's talking about knee replacements. He's talking about heart surgeries, transplant technologies, pills to stave off the creeping horror of Alzheimer's disease. By 2015, according to Callahan and Newland, the cost of Alzheimer's will raise to $189 billion, and by 2050, it is projected to rise to $1 trillion annually, double what Medicare costs right now. Well, goddamn, David, why don't you just say it? Call for the camps. Propose the new, brave new Repiglickin' Logan's Run, Capricorn 2029. Carousel is ready. Only it won't be little 29-year-olds in bad 70s Lycra unitards. In David Brooks's world, it'll be old ladies on walkers and old men in wheelchairs. I remember when that blithering idiot Sarah Palin went on and on and on and on and on and on about death panels. Death panels. Well, there's your death panel. And of course, the death panels really are hard at work every day inside America's insurance companies. Determining who gets treatment and who does not. But it's not enough for David Brooks. He wants to help others deal with death so that he can look forward to a few more years of lobsters. Amazing, isn't it? Oh, there's so much. There's so much tonight. So much for the front porch. Coming from Kate out on the front range. Affirm this, stranger. 5x5 here on the front range. Good. Good, Kate. Bob, that prison prism confusion might have been caused by those India ink initials between your knuckles. Yeah, and a little tattooed teardrop outside one eye. You people. Ron and Raleigh writing. Good to have you back, Bob. While you were away, I had an argument with a fellow about the Civil War. He insisted that the reason for the conflict was economics. That's part of the lost cause thing. That's the 20th century version. When I asked what economics, having explained the symbiotic relationship between the agrarian South and the industrial North, he still insisted it was economics. I tried to give him a short course, including the Kansas-Missouri border wars and the desire to extend slavery into the new territories. These facts did not make a dent in his fallacious argument. That's because he wasn't mounting one. He was merely parroting something that he heard on Hannity or Flimball or probably Bortz or one of those other, and all the filthy historical revisionists that are out there. I told Kevin Shanley about wall builders, and I bless his heart, I thought he was going to have a baby. They're doing what? Mighty good people. No, there is. There's a ton of stuff out there. I've got a moment here. She's probably already seen it and or heard it, but God, how can you not play it? I will never offer myself as a good pronunciator, for I frequently get the emphasis on the wrong syllables of Yiddish. But even I don't do this.
Here's the big issue. The president doesn't want to have to be confronted with priorities in spending because he has a lot of chutzpah. He spent $1 trillion on the stimulus. It failed.
A lot of what? Beg pardon? Yeah, that was Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman talking about Barack Obama's chutzpah. His chutzpah. With a name like Bachman, you know, that's German or something, right? You'd think she'd know how to do one of those with a CH. Chutzpah. I'm going to say something now that's going to cause you all to just have the creeping horrors. Is it possible? Is it possible that America deserves Michelle Bachman? Could it just be that there are so many ignorant people in this country now that we actively, openly, no two ways about it, deserve Michelle Bachman? Could be. So, well, damn, there went an hour. We'll take a little break and come back. Your phone calls. This is Friday on the Front Porch After All. Light them up. You know the numbers. 877-443-2366. The numeral 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. You're welcome in the chat room. It's live and free. Head on radionetwork.com. Just click on chat room, register up, and go right in. There's a lovely little conversation going on right now. And one little mention, because it's badly needed. If you feel like hitting the PayPal button while you're over at headonradionetwork.com, that'd be real cool. I am proud to announce that last Friday's challenge did generate sufficient contributions for the challengers to meet their self-imposed obligations, Susan and John. Thank you very, very much. It got us down there, took care of us, and then one contribution just a couple of days ago got us back. But we have to look up to see down for the hole we were in for this month. And, you know, that's partially my fault because, you know, we were gone during June to Netroots Nation, and I was away from the mic for some advocacy work, and then this Prism series was so important it could not be refused. But when I'm not here behind the microphone, contributions largely, with several exceptions, and you know who you are, go away. Thank you to those who have contributed, but we are in a big hole with the usual month's big debts to deal with. So any help at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, the PayPal button, or the snail mail address, makes no difference, would be mightily appreciated. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
something. Yeah, I just catch myself wondering and waiting and worrying about some silly little things going out of nothing. And then she looks me in the eye, says we don't have to help again, and no, I can't begin to doubt it. Oh, cause I just feel so good, so free, so right. I know we ain't never gonna change our minds about it. Yes, here comes my girl. Here comes my girl.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Six minutes past the hour, and, you know, I just played that Tom Petty cut because I wanted to. I love that song. I love that whole album. Damn the Torpedoes, remember? I do. I guess it's, well, I associated with my lost and misspent youth. Forgive me, it's Friday on the front porch. I just love a little good rock and roll here and there. Let's see. You know what? I filibustered for the first hour, so it's your turn. Let us immediately cease the shilly-shallying and go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, welcome back.
Hey, Sandra, thanks.
So, we're supposed to be all excited because Obama got upset because Republicans won't raise the debt ceiling and let him pass through $4 trillion worth of cuts? I'm supposed to be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm excited about that bullshit. He got upset because Republicans won't let him finish off the New Deal? Fuck Obama, okay? I am so done. I can't deal with the spin, the fake, he got him against the wall chit-chat, because this motherfucker has, like, put everything on the table for the taking. Now he's talking about means testing Medicare in a way that, dumb Americans, rich people shouldn't get it. You know, totally annihilating the concept of the fire station mentality. You know, we don't means test our firehouses, right?
Except that now we do. I'm not being hard to live with here. No, I get what you're saying, because I kept looking at it, Sandra, and saying, wait a minute, because I see the emails, that I get a lot of them every day from various and sundry organizations that are out there, support President Obama now as he fights the mean Republicans. Well, you know what? They are mean. They're assholes. But you don't fight them by giving them what they want, and he offered them what they wanted. I mean, did I miss that?
And he's pissed off that he can't go big. Go big, or we're going to take care of the deficit, and then we'll come back to jobs. What kind of ass-backwards shit is this? And the fact that this man has totally embraced this expansionary austerity, people and the press, people don't realize, certain segments in this society, they are facing a fight for their lives.
Well, see, that's why
what's going on.
That's why I delved into that David Brooks crap.
Oh, no, you know, that man, he slips up, and his eugenics, he's into that shit, he just wants a die-off. At the end of the day, when you pull back them folks, they always want a die-off. It always comes down to that.
Yeah, because you can't say that all Medicare is dedicated towards simply preserving, what did he call us, Sandra, a skin bag?
Now listen, they're so dubious when push comes to shove, they always reveal the Malthusian aspects of their whole program. Because his ass ain't gonna have to worry about it.
Right, because he's not gonna be
done.
Because unless people get serious about those machetes Malloy kept talking about last night.
Shit. Yeah,
it ain't gonna be David Brooks, no.
No, but I mean, what's really pissing me off is the sort of coverage of this. I'm telling you, this is, they are attempting to completely finish off the social contract here with Obama's help. I'm over it. I mean, I've read so many articles from these various progressives.
Yeah, well, no offense, Sandra. I don't know if it's Obama's help so much as it begins to resemble some sort of weird Stockholm syndrome-y kind of, because, I mean, when Move On is sending you support Obama notes,
Right. No, but the thing is that, these people are going to tell me that this man is just, he's a neoliberal from Chicago. And that's it. That's the end of the day. It's done. It's over with. We know what he is now. Now you got to fight. You have to fight it. That's the thing. I'm like, I'm not going to be explaining Obama nothing. He's on their side. He's not on mine. And people like me, which is like 95% of the country, we're up against it now. We are about to be fucked over big time, because there's no reason for this fight. That's what the baseline is. At the end of the day, you're like, this is some straight up Naomi Klein shock
doctrine
shit. I straight out the book. It's hella frightening.
Well, you know, Stanley Cutler is 75 years old, and I'm going to have him on the show sometime soon. He said he'd be happy to.
Is that the economist?
Well, no, he's a lawyer and a law professor and a history professor.
Oh, okay.
And he's the guy who made the compelling argument for the release of the Nixon White House tapes.
Oh, okay.
He did that. But he looked at a room full of grade school, middle school, and high school history teachers, and Ferg and me. He looked at us all, 75-year-old man, good humored and everything. He looked at us all and said, "Why aren't you people on the barricades?" And that resonated with me. Because then he sort of lit into everything and everything that's going wrong, and it wasn't lost on I think it was Professor Cutler who may have said, look, Barack Obama is a neoliberal, and I have you to thank for the fact that you started talking about those 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
You get the ahead of the curve toaster.
Well, no, it's only because I was exposed to it, and when I started looking into it and trying to, and I said, oh, no, hell no. You see what I mean? And then I was inundated with it, because when you do international relations, that is the basis, is neoliberalism. You have to buy into that, and that is how it goes from there. Okay? And you get your subscription to foreign policy, and you're on the road. But it's total neoliberalism. It's another one of those phrases that wasn't in the sort of common vernacular, but it is a bit more well known now, I have to say, don't you think?
Oh, I'd say it's made it to common parlance at this point.
Yeah.
Because people, we work so hard. I mean, I remember Guy James talking about this. I remember Guy James saying, "I will not call myself a progressive. I am a liberal."
Mm.
And once again, it's a case of a word it was sort of, I don't know, it was taken from us and reassigned. And so now we have neoliberals, and it means something really, really ugly.
Well, the thing, you have to understand the liberal, liberty, negative freedoms. There's a whole range of terminology that uses liberal, but it literally means hands off. And you can expand from that. When they talk about hands off, well, that means there is no interference with anything. You just drop dead. No interference, please. Just go die. So if you look at it from that point of view, you can see the sort of why the word liberal is used. Because liberalizing economies, liberalizing anything, means to free it from whatever constraint might be there.
And there was a hint of that going back a lot of years ago. Who was that clown that was running Australia for a while?
Howard?
Yeah. Yeah, he was, it was way back when when the Australian contingent of this program's audience, in conjunction with John Fox, began explaining to me, "No, liberal don't mean what you think it means, Bob."
Yeah, no. I mean, it's a funny sort of terminology, but I do think that it's because everyone now can see that the policies that brought on this recent financial collapse is a result of neoliberalism, and it's much more prominent in Europe, the terminology, so it's well known there, and it used to be viewed as positive. That's what I was saying when I first discovered it. It was talked about as it's a positive movement. Globalization, all that was considered good.
And so at this point, though, it's in full flower.
I think it's morphed into something even more sort of insidious, because now the state is more wedded to it, so they're just spinning a bunch of lies. Because if it was really neoliberalism, you would not have the constant state bailouts that are going on, and that's the inherent flaw of it. That's why it's a bunch of bullshit, because it can't exist without either heavily state bailouts or military, and that's what the U.S. is.
And right, in terms of what using the military as a prop, both an economic prop and a prop up for the multinationals.
Yeah, the open markets. I mean, if you look at, you know, we just went through a whole history of the U.S. So keep in mind that the U.S. has always been the first thing is concerned with markets. When there was no government at all in this country, they still was mainly concerned with markets and opening markets. Just like Rome. I mean, you know how it is.
Yeah, well, Washington said, do business with everybody, but avoid foreign entanglements.
Right, that's the thing. We always was interested in markets, foreign markets and opening markets, you know.
It changes the way you look at something like the Monroe Doctrine. I remember being in you know, sixth grade or whatever, and the Monroe Doctrine was the noble, good, and upstanding United States protecting the small, struggling nations of Central and South America against being oppressed by Europe.
Yeah.
But, no, it didn't quite work out that way, did it? It was, no, we're going to oppress them ourselves.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the U.S. just, you know, if you mentioned Hamilton. I mean, they just taken a page out of Britain. I mean, before Britain became a empire, they had tariffs, protections, infant, you know, they protected shit to the max. Trust and believe that. It wasn't until they, you know, started having empire that they said, oh, free trade for everybody.
Yeah.
Understand the pattern?
And it is. It's a pattern, isn't it?
No. It's just like Spain in the Habsburg, free trade for everybody.
You know, you get these marvelous little factlets that sort of just drop along the way that these scholars throw out there as if, well, you know, everybody knows that. You know, I was just sort of listening along, monitoring my board and making sure that the cameras were working and everything. And I forget who it was that started talking about the fact that in the absolute zenith of their self delusions, the Southerners were thinking, you know what we need to do? We need to go capture Cuba. And they actually developed plans for conquering everything south of the of North America.
All right.
And why? Because it would be easier to create slave economies there.
Right.
And, you know, some of that stuff just kind of makes your eyes roll back in your head and you want to start speaking in tongues. And, you know, so much of this empire, because, you know, they had their eyes on empire. The Southerners did. And it confounds your ability to reason, Sandra, when it seems like it would just be so much simpler to mind your own business, take care of your own stuff, and go about the business of living. But no, it's not enough, is it? They gotta have their finger in the whole world's pie, it seems like. And it stymies me.
That's why I'm a big fan of, you know, I like to hear Dennis Kucinich when he talks about, you know, ending the wars and stuff. But, you know, it's all wistfully because I think about, well, I say, Dennis, you know, do you really know the purpose of the U.S. military? And if we all of a sudden withdrew all that, what would fucking happen to this country? I don't think you want to know. People may not intuitively or may not understand explicitly, but intuitively you ought to know that this shit is protecting your ass. Because as soon as it collapses, you know, people got, grudges, okay? So it's a double-edged sword. It's like, yeah, I don't want all the wars either, but...
Yeah, you know, well, it goes...
There's a lot of enemies waiting at bay.
It goes back to that whole Jefferson talking about riding the wolf thing. You're on it, you're riding it, you didn't want to ride it, but, you know, you don't dare get off.
Well, and I'm sort of being facetious, but, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, yikes. Britain was lucky, because when they're... In empire collapse, they had the U.S. to fall back on.
To soften the blow.
It's very important that people don't ever understand. It's fascinating. It's like, okay, yeah, they kind of had to pull back, but they had a soft landing because the U.S. was more than happy, or not reluctantly. They were reluctant, but they stepped up into the vacuum, and yeah, they completely annihilated the finances of Roosevelt's treasury made damn sure that we got every goddamn cent ever taken from us from the time we were created, okay? So we got paid back.
And, you know, it's interesting that they did get that soft landing because on the one hand, as the empire collapses, you get the rise of India, which is done, comparatively speaking, relatively bloodlessly. On the other hand, the French Empire collapses, and they get Algeria.
Well,
you know, compare those two.
Well, also, you know, it's something to be said, and this may be a bit tricky to say, but the institutions that England had, and Gandhi even said this, you know, made it much more plausible for India to sort of have that kind of transition. You see what I'm saying? Westminster, that whole model, you know, offered some alleviation. Whereas the French, a new republic every week? No. No relief for the colonies, you know?
Exactly. And
anyway, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. It actually, no. That, come on. You make it. You don't know how not to make sense. I can't recall one where you didn't. But it's... Well, as we watch all of this unfold, Sandra, I'm torn between the Albert sun will come up tomorrow scenario and the just sick, sinking feeling that I have that if this shit does go sideways, you know, the wealthy are not going to take it lying down, and they will take it out on our ass.
Well, it's just, I mean, the thing is that it really is hard to say. I mean, for example, you know, all this sort of Moody and S&P, all these people down, you know, it's just a bunch of BS because all the sort of finance of the U.S. is public, right? It's public. So we don't need Moody's to evaluate the debt. It's right there for everyone. You see what I'm saying? So it's a load of bullshit. It's like, what do you have to do with it?
Yeah, it doesn't rely on inside information as to whether or not Steve Jobs is going to get a new pancreas.
Right. You don't have to evaluate the, you know, the stocks and the bonds and, you know, how credit worthy they are. I mean, this is public.
The threats that Moody's making.
Bullshit.
Yeah, that's just out and out sort of financial thuggery, isn't it?
It's politics. Yeah, it's just, you know, the whole thing is politics. But, you know, I had a conversation with my mother. My mother is 73, which means she collects Social Security and, you know, Medicare. And it's just sort of like, you know, she's just sort of slightly concerned, right?
Well, how could you not be?
Yeah.
I mean, look at how many people out there who spent their working lives and broke their bodies in the course of it and are at this point in time disabled and drawing Title II Social Security disability. How many people are there who are drawing SSI?
Right.
And that's all they have.
Right. That's right. And this is the reality for they just seem to think that people have resources that they don't have. It's just really astounding. And this voucherization of 65 to 67 year olds, what are them poor people going to do if they raise the age? What, you know, the in between, what's going to happen? You're going to go to a Blue Cross? Hi, I need a policy. How's that going to work?
Well, I mean, the short answer is it ain't.
Well, we back to Brooks and the die off.
It does seem like it, and it ain't funny.
I don't want to hear Obama talking about, well, someone like me. It's like, shut up, you know? You can mean...
Well, no, I mean, you and I... Sandra, you and I are the same age. You know,
right.
I mean, and I get a little testy.
Baby boomers.
Yeah. You know, just the last tail end of the baby boom.
Right.
The last hurrah of some 39 and 40-year-olds.
Right.
And... you know, I don't take kindly to it at all when somebody says, well, you know, when you, you know, they'll be those guys will be okay. They can wait till they're 75 to collect Social Security, and you know, Medicare won't need to kick in till they're 70. That's just another way of counting on the die off because the statistics aren't there. One of the things I heard, and I didn't take issue with it, was I heard a guy saying, you know, I'm not so upset about raising the Medicare eligibility age. We're living longer, and that is not true.
It's incredible, that whole meme. It's just out there, once again, you know, propagated by people who don't have to worry about it. And they may be living to be 78, 89 in their best behind whatever think tank they work. I mean, it's just all so insidious. And, I mean, I don't mean to, you know, attack, you know, Obama. It's just like, but it's just so beyond disappointing and disturbing. It's like you are working on a legacy of being the one that, you know, destroys the three stools of the, you know, the last three legs of the, I don't know, it's just something about that is just really doing my head in. It's like Cynthia McKinney said, damn, black folks have lost their damn innocence. I was like, oh, shit. Okay?
No, really, she said that?
That was deep. That was deep. I said, that cut me. I thought, oh, no. Yeah. She was talking about the bombing in Libya. She said, we got a black man bombing Africa. I was like, oh, stop, stop, stop. So, you know.
Okay, I warded off an urge to let a little snort go by on that one, but yeah, that's one of those that's a wake up call.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah. Anyway, it's just sort of, and so I'm not feeling very, you know, charitable to him, and I want to hear about, you know, how he driving these crackers crazy. Well, that's a given, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and it's it I mean, it's such a given. I don't think that. Well, it was ugly, but it didn't play out this way when it was the staring battle between Clinton and Gingrich, did it?
Oh no, that was just two good old boys. Wasn't they both cracks? They know what time it was.
Yeah, exactly. That was just, you know, that was just two boys with chaw tobacco in the jaw spitting on each other's shoes,
yeah,
for a while.
You know.
But that wasn't the debt ceiling either. That was, you know, that was just. Yeah, that was a budgetary thing. We'll shut the government down for a couple of days.
No, but I love Obama. What is he coming out every hour on the hour talking about what horror is awaiting for us next? It's like, it's just some sort of nightmare. And I blame people for just tuning out. Oh, my God, because it's really sort of horrifying. But yeah, apparently what's going to happen is as the days go on, it's not like everything drops. Apparently the market's freaking out beforehand. That's, you know, start seeing interest rates go up and all kinds of little things. So, you know, strap in. I guess it's good that you're back. And by the way, you know Michael Parenti?
Oh, yeah.
He said he don't care about no President Bachman. I was dying. You understand what I'm saying? I love Michael Parenti. I was laughing. I said, damn. He said, yeah, this place is basically shot to hell. It might as well be that bitch. He didn't say that, but I'm just asking.
Well, I mean, that's why I asked the question I asked. You know, maybe we deserve her.
Yeah, and I was laughing when you said that. When you played her, how in the world? And no one stopped when she said, what did she call it? What did she say?
Chutzpah.
Okay, so she was trying to say chutzpah, right?
Right, but get this. David in Tennessee wrote in with a little extra nugget of yumminess. Within her district, Sandra, lies the single largest Jewish enclave in Minnesota.
Well, but I do think you have you are making a good point talking about, you know, you get what you whatever Rumsfeldian thing you're going on about, you get what you deserve or whatever.
I guess this is where I have to cue up the Stones, right? You can't always get what you want.
I'm not saying I would never vote for Bachman, of course, but, you know, when I start hearing people like Parenti and, you know, a few other people kind of alluding to this sort of, it's so broke that whatever, you know, you
well,
just
it,
really
I,
wonder
I can't,
going on.
What I can't believe, and, you know, I'm sure this is fodder for the 11-dimensional chess crowd. What I can't believe is that he put that on the table and they didn't go, done.
Oh, exactly. No, and that's the thing. But what's even more disturbing, you heard the latest, that stupid plan of Turtlehead.
Oh, wants to rewrite the, what's he trying to do, call a constitutional convention?
Well, he wants to, you know, completely cede the authority and give everything to Obama to do what he wants. But Obama is even saying no to that. That's what people ain't talking about. I'm like, he don't want that. He wants to go big. Go big.
And I saw an argument today that, he does. He want go big or go home. You know, I mean, it's all just out there on the court.
But I am so disturbed that we have to see him stomping around and getting all gruff over this.
But I saw an argument being made that the most important thing for him is that he be someone who brought about a bipartisan agreement.
Well, now that's that bubble land again, and these people who write that stuff are in the bubble too.
Yeah.
And because once again, everyone's talking around the idea that, hello, you may be looking at double-digit unemployment when you run, fool. It ain't nothing you can say about a deficit is going to help your ass. I'm sorry, if it's that kind of party.
And you know what? The closer we get to November 2012, the less a deficit's going to matter.
That's what I'm saying. They don't matter to most people now.
I mean, one in 2010, why won't some idiotic Republican nominee hollering, jobs, 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 why won't that win in 2012?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, no.
It will.
Yeah, it's absurd what's going on now. And if he thinks that this is going to be the legacy of one term.
Oh, I know, and didn't that statement come out? I don't care if this does make me a one-term president. It's the right thing, something like that.
Yeah, it's just what planet, dude? What planet? Oh, I'll let you go, but I must mention we've seen the real face of the sort of horrible gulag state in this country,
California. I wanted it. Yeah, the hunger strike?
Yeah. This is for real, for real. And what's really going on is that the officials don't give a F. It's going to be Bobby Sands plus. They don't care if these people die.
They've said that the California prison officials have said that they will not be held hostage.
Oh, it's probably an asymmetrical attack, right?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Well, the other side of that coin was one that sort of grabbed me, sort of a little moment. I don't know if you saw this. Did you see the business about the big protest in the BART station?
Oh, you mean because they're shooting and killing folks again?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's like, I'm like, why can't you catch public transportation in the Bay Area while getting shot to death? But anyway,
well,
I didn't see the protest. No.
Well, the protest went on, but then, you know, there was one of those facepalm moments because the spokesman for BART came out at the Bay Area Rapid Transit and said blah, 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 you know, said what spokespeople say. And the protesting people immediately responded by calling him an Uncle Tom. And it's just, you know, one of those moments, because I'm sure there were some white folks in the crowd. Had to have been. And come on. Because the argument is a sound one. Get the guns, because, you know, there's a history here. Get the guns out of the hands of the BART police. Because they're not using them appropriately.
It's just disturbing. It's like, I don't know. You know, when I lived in England, you know, I rode the underground like nonstop. And maybe now, that was before 9/11, but, you know, even when I was there in 2008, I didn't see, you know, all sorts of guns on the underground. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah. But you will be, you will get a giggle out of this before I know you got to go, but I got to share this with you before you do. Introduce you to a fellow by the name of Deshaun Marmon, 20 years old, plays football for the University of New Mexico. You know, the Lobos, that stands for Lose Our Butts on Saturday. he was arrested rather vigorously recently because he's a San Francisco native. He was flying to Albuquerque to attend a friend's funeral, and a flight attendant got after him on the plane and told him to pull his pants up. And he wouldn't. So he was charged with, upon landing, he was charged with suspicion of trespass, battery, and resisting arrest. Because he wouldn't pull his pants up sufficiently when he was told to by a flight attendant. you know, just welcome to the FSA, the Fascist States of America.
Oh yeah, no, that's outrageous. That's oh wow, no, see, I'm like, I, you know, I don't.
Because see, black kids aren't the only kids who wear their pants hanging down. It's word I learned about ostentatious noticeability or something like that. But you know
also
what?
Also known as youth.
Yeah, dumb and young and dumb.
You know.
But my money says sweet Polly purebred flight attendant would not have said that to a white kid. I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, oh no, and they don't put handcuffs on little white 6 year olds either.
No. Nor do they arrest them for trying. Nor do they arrest white U.S. military veterans for attempting to cash a check. You caught that one, right?
Oh no, I didn't. Listen, no. See, I've been escaping big time.
Well, this one just blew my. And of course, it was our fine friends at Chase. Chase Bank.
God.
28-year-old Washington State construction worker. His name is Ikenna Njoku. Army veteran. He qualified for a first-time homebuyer rebate on his tax return, right? So
okay.
The IRS used direct deposit of his rebate into his Chase Bank account.
Right.
So Chase Bank was watching for money to come in because he had some overdrafts. And so they took $600 in overdraft fees to recoup their expenses, you know, because Chase has expenses. But then they mailed him a check drawn on the Chase Bank for $8,463.21. They mailed him that check. So he shows up at Chase to cash the check, Sandra. And the teller refused to believe it was legitimate. He left and came back a little later hoping to talk to somebody else, and the cops were waiting for him. He was arrested. And wound up spending 3 days in jail because the local detective was off work. So in the interim of being off work for 3 days, he gets fired. His car gets towed. He has to sell the car because he couldn't afford to get it out of the pound. And Chase still hasn't apologized.
Wow, and it was his money.
Yeah, it was his money.
Oh, my God.
From the United States of America, it was his money.
Unbelievable! Wow. Well, thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, just another happy day in the land, the home of the free, right?
Oh God! Wow. Okay. Well, I ain't got nothing to say about that.
Yeah, I know.
That's
just
terrible.
Happy trails.
All right. Bye bye.
See you, Sandra. Bye. No, you got that right. And then there's another veteran, the one who was multiplegic. From either Georgia's war in Iraq or Georgia's war in Afghanistan. So a group that was going to, a group that builds homes for disabled veterans got him a nice home in Augusta, Georgia. Homeowners Association says, no, we don't want you here. You can't live here. Do I have to tell you what color his skin was? I mean, I just said Augusta, Georgia, didn't I? Yeah, right. Kind of makes you want to sing. You know, Ferg and I took in a baseball game on July the 4th. It was the Bluefield Blue Jays, and they had a fireworks extravaganza afterward. They played Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA 5 times. Then they segued into playing Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA 4. Email coming in before we go back to the phones. Darlene writing in, does anyone seriously believe that David Brooks would be able to handle 1 minute in the shoes of that brave gentleman with ALS? No, Darlene, I don't think we do. Although I do not have ALS, which is a certain death sentence, I have a different form of muscular dystrophy that I struggle with every day. I struggle to get out of chairs, to walk without falling, to lift my arm up to grab a cup or a plate off the shelf. I'm fighting like hell against my form of MD, which is progressive and can be debilitating. It is monumentally frustrating and unnerving because I don't know what things will be like for me in the next 10 or 20 years. This wonderful healthcare system that David Brooks trumpets hasn't done all that much in terms of my disease. After 30-plus years since being diagnosed, I have seen no progress on a treatment, let alone a cure. Hell, I'd be thrilled if some research was simply being done on quality of life improvements and concerns for people like me. But no, there's nothing. I'd venture to guess that Davy Boy wouldn't be able to handle one day in my shoes either. Although I've spent many years building up a business and am very fortunate to be independent in spite of my disease, I must say that I am grateful that SSDI and SSI are there just in case. Of course, who knows what's going to happen come August 2nd or 3rd. I totally empathize with people who are incapacitated by disabilities and diseases. In this country, it is extremely expensive to have a disability. Extremely expensive. It is very easy to wax poetic when you don't have a major health concern. But I can guarantee you that if that miserable, arrogant piece of crap, David Brooks, had ALS, MD, MS, or Parkinson's, he'd be doing everything under the sun to fight off his impending death and then some. Hell, he'd be right there on the front lines begging for stem cell research. David Brooks is an arrogant, clueless coward. Plain and simple. Darlene. Thank you. Thank you, Darlene. Under the subject line, shaking my head, Georgia writes, "Hi, Bob. You're like a drink of cool water in the desert. Welcome back. I'm listening to you and Sander talk about the neoliberals, and I'm wondering why, oh why, everyone is so surprised. I remember that Vice President Biden took many campaign contributions from the big credit card companies when he was running for senator, and if memory serves, I remember reading at the time that he was heavily involved with Capital One credit card services. Did he turn over a new leaf when he ran for VP? Neoliberals is exactly right. These just know how to smooth talk you and make you feel all warm and fuzzy while they give you the shaft. At least kiss me first, you classless bastards. Love to Agnes and hugs to all. Keep fighting, Georgia." Thank you, Georgia. Yeah, I remember when Joe Biden thought that bankruptcy reform was the very thing that America needed. Of course, they reformed bankruptcy for you and me so that we couldn't get out from under ruinous credit card interest rates and predatory debt and things. Somehow or another, bankruptcy for corporations didn't need any reforming. Interesting that, huh? By the way, there may be something about the man in the underwear, the pull your pants up story. Oh, yeah. I see. Ron and Raleigh writing, "About 2 weeks after the ballplayer was arrested, a white man flew his entire flight in women's underwear. Needless to say, he was not arrested." Okay, I got to sort this out here real quick. I do not like to knowingly give that information. Yeah, 6 days before a college football player, this is from SF Gate, 6 days before a college football player was arrested at San Francisco International Airport in a dispute that began when a U.S. Airways employee asked him to pull up his sagging pants, a man who was wearing Little Bit Women's undergarments was allowed to fly the airline. This is a guy that apparently likes to don women's underwear and so forth and fly on the airlines and apparently is allowed to. Nothing dirty about it. It's kind of in line with my whole campaign theory of let's all fly wearing nothing but Speedos and flip-flops. Deshaun Marmon, University of New Mexico player, yanked from Albuquerque-bound flight June 15th at SFO. Police claimed Marmon's boxer shorts were exposed. He was arrested. He's 20 years old. He refused a U.S. Airways employee's request to pull up his pants to keep his underwear from showing. Marmon's attorney, Joe Sullivan, said his client had been stereotyped by U.S. Airways as a thug and that the airline was guilty of racial discrimination for asking Marmon to adjust his clothes. The newspaper notes Marmon is African-American. He added, "A white man's allowed to fly in underwear without question, but my client was asked to pull up his pajama pants because they hung below his waist." Just look up man in underwear. Man flies U.S. Airways in women's underwear. SF Gate. Man flies U.S. Airways in women's underwear. You know, so? But you know what? Apply it across the board. That guy's old and white and whimsical. Deshaun Marmon was young and black and frightening.
just because he was black.
Mind you. Yeah, you get the idea. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome back, Brother Bob.
Cossack, how are you, brother?
Not real hot.
Sorry to hear it. What's up?
Being bedeviled by numerous of the elements I have. And my Tigger is heading south. That's always fun.
I and the rest of us are sorry to hear that. I believe it was Zedoichi in the chat room earlier this evening said anybody heard from Cossack. So thank you for calling in.
Yeah. Well,
he must have conjured you.
We'll keep on trying. But anyway, first, if it weren't for Medicare, I definitely wouldn't be here. As it was, having no income, living off the goodwill of my brother, I've been running around with undiagnosed and untreated, which led to a lot of other ancillary problems. The thing is, were I not on Medicare, I would still not be treated for it. Last time I checked my blood sugar before I actually started undergoing treatments, it was like at 515.
That's not healthy.
No. Around 600 and you die.
Yeah, you start getting close to you can go comatose at 500, can't you?
Yeah.
Jesus, I and all of us hate that you're going through this stuff, Cossack, but you know, you're talking about reality from a reality place, much as Darlene was writing about.
Yeah.
These clueless bastards, these merciless pricks, don't have the first ability to even try to use what tiny bit of imagination. It's not, I guess we're just not worth their time to try to imagine the lives of those who struggle, are we?
Well, it's kind of like the story about the man, an old wealthy man, who woke up with a toothache. He sees this young kid screaming his son off. He says, "What's the matter? Do you have a toothache too?" He says, "No, poisonous snake bit me." "Oh, well, it can't be that bad." And that's their mindset. A transient discomfiture on their part is worth more than your life is. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
They and their chosen playmates, that's basically all they care about. And as Sandra so brilliantly alluded to, you know, they're trying to force a mass die-off. And it's true. I mean, I had it very nicely explained to me by an ecologist one time up at Maryland University. He and I were talking. He says, "Look, very simple solution. The only problem is 90% of the human race has to go."
Yeah.
And all our problems are gone at that point.
But yeah, well, you know, the thing with the Malthusians, though, is that all our at this point in time, Cossack, all our problems aren't gone. Because even if you get a 90% Malthusian die-off, you still got the problem of a planet that has been rendered very nearly uninhabitable at this point.
True. And another point they keep on forgetting is planning on mining the ore, refining the ore, making it into whatever they need? I don't think so. Somebody has to produce this crap. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, somebody's got to haul in the lobsters, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's only going to be these people. They like their lobster, but they certainly wouldn't want to go get it.
Well, you know, one of the discussions that came up, and I know you are, you know, you've got an appreciation for Civil War history and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the discussions that came up during the PRISM broadcasts was the question, and it was presented on the last day because the teachers had to sort of split off into groups, and they came up with what are called DBQs, document-based questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of teaching children about primary sources and so forth. And within with one group, you know, asked the question, and it was kind of posed toward middle schoolers, who had it worse, a slave in the South or an industrial worker in the North? And in a way, it was a troubling question, I thought.
Yeah.
Because there are such profound differences between the two, but I found myself conflicted as the discussion went on, because there is the hateful slavery of human bondage, but and that can never ever fully be appreciated or even codified, because what the South did was a form of slavery that was more hateful. Even the ancient Rome and ancient Greece were slave economies; they ran on slavery, but manumission was fairly frequent. Much more so than the pre-Civil War South, and slaves could earn wages in both those cultures, and had certain degrees of autonomy.
Yeah.
None of that applied to the pre-Civil War South, however.
Oh no, no.
And you could say, well, you know, an industrial worker in the early days of the Industrial Revolution in the American North, you know, they could go somewhere else.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Because, you know, when you're working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, for pittance wages, how are you going to pack up and go somewhere else? And in many instances, those were people who had come from a foreign shore and didn't have the ability to strike out for the territories, for instance.
Yeah.
And slavery was always... you know, some sort of wage and debt slavery was always hot on their heels.
Well, and the thing is, Bob, this country, I hate to say it, but this country was founded on inequality, has feasted on it. I mean, that is how the wealthy got wealthy. They didn't get wealthy, with rare exception, they didn't get wealthy because of their own personal brilliance. You know, people forget Thomas Edison really didn't do all that much inventing. Past the early days, he really didn't do all that
much. No, more than anything else, he was an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I don't know if you realize this, but one of his earliest recordings was found, and the folks out at what once was Lawrence Livermore but is now renamed something else, they digitized without actually touching the solid metal disc that had a recording on it, and it turned out that he was stockpiling these recordings for a prototype of the world's first talking doll. And the woman whose voice is heard repeating "Twinkle, twinkle, little star" is literally the first recording artist in known history. But you know, everything for Edison was a money-making, get-rich-quick scheme. Look at Edison's response to alternating current. Do you know this story?
Oh yeah, intimately.
Where
he detested Tesla. get the vengeance.
Exactly.
For that very reason.
And with alternating current, they put a bunch of dogs on a metal plate. Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
And ran AC through it and fried the dogs.
Yeah. And they did the same thing with an elephant.
To prove that alternating current was inherently dangerous, right?
Correct. Correct.
Jesus.
And
as a means of making money on their own scheme, right?
Right. Well, the thing is, I mean, in some ways, Edison was correct. However, that would have doomed us to having power stations virtually on every corner. You know, direct current doesn't travel real well.
No.
And, you know, it was fine for that little test plot that he had. But, you know, if electric lights go up everywhere, that means you need power stations everywhere.
Right. Maybe I've got it backwards. I thought Edison was direct current and
yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said.
and that was the right. I mean, my mother, who was born in 1925 and grew up in the Depression not far from where I sit now, told us the story of her childhood wherein the only electricity they had came from Delco batteries.
Yeah.
Which is of course DC.
Right.
Because, you know, the power cut, nobody wanted to string power lines out into, you know, rural West Virginia until the government stepped in with the Rural Electrification Act.
Right.
The
government that doesn't do anything, right?
Right, because we're, right, exactly. You know, I watched, there was a big hearing in Washington, D.C. yesterday, Cossack, on House Bill 2018, which would gut the Environmental Protection Agency.
Right.
And I watched one of the sleazy whores from the coal industry here, a guy named Chris Hamilton. And you can tell how far this sort of anarcho-Randian philosophy has gone, because he referred to the atlas-like shoulders of the coal industry.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Atlas-like. You're going to love this. You're aware of the health study that's come out about mountaintop removal and birth defects and stuff?
Yeah.
Our governor here, a guy by the name of Earl Ray Tomblin, who is not going to impress anyone with his overarching intelligence or wit, was asked about the birth defect study. His response? You're going to love this. Well, every day somebody somewhere is claiming something makes you sick. It's one of those, you know, it's just one of those, another of those little signposts on the road. Apocalypse, 15 miles, you know.
It's another one of those head me palm moments.
Yep. Don't!
I mean, must be nice to be ignorant.
I don't think you've ever said anything so profound, Cossack.
I mean, you know, that's the only thing I can possibly imagine, is that these people simply don't understand how ignorant they are.
Oh, it's straight out of Idiocracy. It's the moment where the doctor's examining Jones says, "But don't worry about being tarted. My ex-wife's tarted, and she's an airline pilot." Tarted. Sometimes it's just breathtaking. Well, we have been fretting about you, Cossack. I'm glad you called in, and I'm sorry you're not well. Is there doctor visits down the road or anything?
Yeah.
Or you know, do you just want to walk into David Brooks's office and say hi?
No. Only if I had an explosive vest, yeah. The latest in men's clothing. Yeah. Oh, you've heard that lunacy, right? That they're peddling that.
Which?
That possible future terrorists are going to carry the bombs inside of themselves.
Oh God! I saw that while I was away. I think it was one of the mornings when I was having bad decaf out on the veranda of the hotel. And it was another one of those beautiful moments where you read down, there is no indication that any of this is actually happening, but people who were paid to just sit around with their thumbs up their asses fantasizing about scary stuff have decided we need to be warned.
Correct. I mean, you know, that's the thing, Bob. That's what makes terrorist attacks so terrifying, is there is literally no way to 100% defend yourself from them. Nobody lives in that kind of a bubble. You know, some
right. I mean, that's why. I mean, that's why the boys in the Pentagon call it asymmetrical.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, that's what's so terrifying. I mean, I can sit there and dream up this science fiction bullshit myself. And I hate to say it, but I think we're heading for Soylent Green.
Kind of hard to. Well, I don't think you're being over the top in saying that. It's hard to avoid when you look at the modern diesel and corn. What is it? Diesel and number two field grade corn that Michael Pollan writes about.
Yeah,
it's the vast majority of our diet as it stands. And we, and yet the Republican Party can't conceive of the idea that maybe. Cutting out the ethanol subsidies because that wasn't real smart in the first place, and letting those, no, can't do that. Jets, sorry, no write-offs for jets. Oh, it's communism.
I mean, good Lord, Bob, come on. If your corporation can afford a jet, it sure as shit better be able to afford the tax on it. You think?
Well, you know, I mean. Isn't that the way the rest of us live? If we can't afford to pay the taxes, we don't get the plate, and we don't therefore drive the car?
That's it.
I mean, don't they... Well, but see, major corporations get to write off the cost of the taxes, and they get to write off the cost of the insurance, and they get to write off the... Oh, Jesus.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If you've got enough bucks that you can afford... you know, that you can afford a jet, you should have the finances available to pay taxes on it.
Right, because you've got to have the... Well, see, we don't understand how hard it is to be that rich, Cossack. That's our problem. Because, yeah. You know, the fuel's expensive, the pilot's expensive, the mechanic's expensive, the hangar space is expensive. It's expensive to own these jets. And to be burdened after that with a confiscatory government that wants to tax you for putting all that money into the economy, it was just unfair. It's unfair. Because after the taxes, you know, you can't afford the Louis XIV, the brandy. You can't afford the crystal goblets. And what the hell's worth? What the hell's a Gulfstream V worth if you can't carry $300 cognac on it? I mean, get real, man.
I mean, I know that's what it looks like from their perspective, but, you know, what was that the Doors said? They got the guns, but we got the numbers?
Yeah. That used to, that's the kind of, they've got X bullets and we've got X, we've got two X people.
Exactly. And a lot of these people who are hiding behind private security and so forth, a lot of these private security people aren't real thrilled with those people. Because they get treated like crap just like everybody else does.
Right.
They know what these people are like.
I'm sorry, I have very little... I have very little patience for some of the dog and pony show. And what Sandra said is very true. It seems like Obama's popping out like a little guy coming out of some exquisite Austrian clock every hour on the hour. Food stamps are going away. There goes your Social Security. Don't know if we'll be able to pay the Medicare bills. Oh, the military. And now, I don't want to be mistaken for being as idiotic as one of these right wingers, who says, "What was it here?" Because this is a beautiful moment. Rick Goodhair Perry says we just got to leave government in God's hands. God, you're gonna have to fix this.
That's about the only possibility I see at this point, unfortunately.
But, yeah. people say, these right... Steve King again. It was Steve King, that idiot, who said he told... Chris Matthews. He told Chris Matthews that he knew that the default wouldn't do anything to the U.S., because he's a family man. No, I'm not kidding.
These people are not all there.
No, not at all.
And, I guess that's part of what annoys me is I remember hanging out at the Capitol in the Senate and House office building. Bob, those guys, by and large, statesmen. They did understand that there is such a thing as the common good of the country. Whatever happened?
Grover Norquist happened. Corporate America happened. I forget who it was at the Prism series was looking at the teachers and said, do you guys know about Citizens United? You should be really, really bothered by this.
Yeah. I mean, again, you remember under Clinton, the Republicans had a virtual shit fit because they accused Clinton and especially Gore of taking Chinese money.
I remember that decade well, and it seemed like I couldn't turn the radio on between noon and three without hearing that that drug-addled junkie, that jiggling gas bag. Flimball, Charlie Tree and the Chi-Coms and the L'Oreal Corporation, they sold our secrets to the Chinese.
Yep.
And yet the minute that George W. Numbnuts gave away sensitive technology in the form of that spy plane, only after threatening to apologize twice, I guess maybe the refreshing burst of flavor was kicking in for Flimball and he couldn't be bothered to worry about the Chi-Coms anymore.
Well, eventually Chi-Com started paying his salary, so, indirectly. Because that's the whole thing, Bob. Money is fungible.
Okay. Well, you know, that reminds me of something, Cossack, because I was thinking just the other day, you know, the economic model that right-wing radio runs on, if we are to believe them, of course we know that they're lying. It's not all advertising dollars. They are heavily funded through outfits like the Heritage Foundation. This is fact, not speculation.
Oh, yeah.
But what happens to right-wing radio if, and you know, the person who said this was none other than Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine. I mean, this guy should know.
Yeah.
What happens if they let it all go to hell, the Republicans, and suddenly, and let's understand something about right-wing radio and advertising. The David Brooks class is not out there ordering Bose Wave radios and herbal erection pills and herbal baldness cures and buying mattresses online.
Right.
That those ads are there for what I refer to as, and, well, not I, but for what the marketing geniuses in radio refer to as the rubes.
Yeah. The sheep.
The rubes buy the Bose Wave radios.
Yeah.
The rubes buy the Swedish mattresses made from exclusive proprietary miracle foam developed by NASA for the moonshots.
Yep.
The rubes buy the baldness cure. Just, you know, it puts the lotion on its skin and then, or else it gets the hose again. The rubes buy the vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the rubes can't buy that crap anymore? I mean, do you realize how many times that ad, or how many people that ad has to reach before one rube picks up the phone?
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, tens of thousands.
Yeah.
There are numbers similar to, if not worse than, the response rate to direct mail. And I think if you get like a 4% response rate to direct mail, you are in the tall cotton. Well, what happens, you know, what happens to the premier radio networks if the rubes go away because their money went away?
Oops.
You know, what happens to Flimball's Gulfstream 5? I mean, does this guy ever tell his audience that he has that he has a conflict of interest because he owns one of those damned things?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't tell anybody, but he should.
Oh, by the way, Ron wrote in a few minutes ago, $300 cognac? Hey, Bob, why are you stocking the cheap stuff on your Gulfstream?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, get that
$1,000 bottle stuff.
Yeah, get that $5,000 stuff in the cut in the cut crystal decanter. Yeah, there you go. We were on board the Lib boat back in February, and they, you know, they've got their little duty free shop there. And Agnes and I were just walking through looking at stuff, and they had one of those $1,500 bottles of cognac in the cut glass lead crystal decanter kind of affairs. Mm-hmm. I forget if it was Courvoisier or Remy Martin or what. And it was sitting there with its price tag on it, and I just looked at Agnes and a couple of other people and said, they must really think well of their ship stabilizing system. Because it was really the real deal, and it was sitting there. I mean, it wasn't nothing in front of it, no glass, no. I mean, I had to wonder if they had one member of that poor little ship's crew whose only job was to stand there and dive if that thing started off the shelf. Agnes looked at it and said, why, how much is it, Bob? And I kind of pointed and she said, let's step back, get away. I don't want to be anywhere near it.
Oh, so, come on, you can just pull that off the shelf.
Oh, I did that. I did that, and it made her crazy. Put it back. Put it back. Put it back. Put that down. I hadn't heard
gently.
Her. Yeah, I hadn't heard that urgency in her voice since the kids were toddlers walking through the China department at Macy's. Let's get out of here. Get out of here. Why did you bring us here? Gotta get out. Cossack, my brother, you have a good evening and a good weekend. I hope we'll hear from you soon.
Okay, you too. It's good to have you back, Bob.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from the wilds of North Florida. Oh, by the way, a reading recommendation. If you need, if you're like me, and, you know, I read this stuff, you know, doing show prep, and it's all heavy, and it's all, you know, oh, my God stuff, and sometimes you just got to get away, and you know, it can't always be the tequila bottle. Sometimes reading is nice. You know, it's like something William said a little bit ago when I was talking about the Civil War and Southerners and so forth. He said, DeMint or any other South Carolina stiff runs his mouth, I look for my great uncle's blue uniform. He said, Rick Smith and I are both project kids, and we agree that Cantor, if Cantor grew up around us, he'd be running home after school and lose his lunch money every day. He said, that's what I want when I want something that veteran AA folks say is a problem for drunks. Yeah. You know, so the it won't all, you know, there's not always solace in that. Sometimes a nice read is handy. And if you like the lunacy of good, wacky crime fiction, I love, you know, I love Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler and Mickey Spillane and all that. I really do. I found one recently, a guy named Tim Dorsey. Oddly enough, a graduate of Auburn University. I say oddly enough because he writes very well. I doubt if his lips even move while he's typing. Whew. Oh, Bob, now you'll get the Auburn letters. Anyway, he's got a series of books that are set in Florida and have a delightful sort of anti-hero, and knowing he's not feeling well, I'm thinking Cossack might enjoy him. Tim Dorsey, and the first book in the series is Florida Roadkill, although I think technically you can back up one, and there's one that goes before that. Maybe it's Hammerhead Ranch. There's a chronology on his website, but the guy is a hoot to read. I was really enjoying him until the Kindle went south. And by the way, you know how we sort of, once you get hooked on your Kindle and the Kindle goes, you become very upset, very upset. By the way, thanks going out to, one person, and you know who you are, who responded and hit the PayPal button this evening. That is very much appreciated. I can't express how much so. Listen, we're going to take a little break and come back to your phone calls and finish out this Friday on the front porch. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And that's not what I thought it was. Dadgummit, I hate this. This makes me crazy. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Oh, someday I'm going to have a producer. Let's see if this is it. There it is. Yeah, I mentioned this earlier. It seems to be appropriate. We'll be right back. I'm Bob. Problem is, I don't even know if we're going to get what we need.
She was gonna meet her connection, and her feet was but loose man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, you might find. Get my fair share of abuse. Singing words gonna vent our frustration. If we don't, we're gonna blow a 50-amp fuse. Just fight.
Yeah, because God knows it won't be what we deserve. I was telling Ferg the other day, we were having one of those discussions that fathers have with sons, and he said something about deserving, and I said, son, we're going to have to sit down and watch The Unforgiven one of these days, because you got to see the moment when Clint Eastwood says,
Deserving's got nothing to do with it. And it doesn't, does it? Of course, along with deserving, I mentioned the issue of does this nation deserve Michelle Bachmann? Clearly, the vote results indicate that this nation did not deserve George W. Bush, but we got him forced on us anyway. But if this nation does not rise up in some form of righteous anger and demand, not just of the Republicans, but of Barack Obama as well, that Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and every good thing that touches people who are working or have worked in this country, if we don't demand that if cuts are to be made, if austerity is to be had, it must be had in the military class, the Pentagon class, the investor class, the Wall Street class, the lobster for lunch class, they can pay for it. Because we didn't crash Wall Street. And we didn't declare those wars. Yes, there's a significant portion of the population of this country who listened to Lee Greenwood and went to rallies and held up placards that said, "Get a brain, morons, go USA." But they are not a majority. And if this majority does not rise up in its righteous anger and demand that all of these so-called negotiators keep their godforsaken hands off of the things that really matter in this country, well, there will be, despite Clint Eastwood, there will be an element of deserving involved. Silence, as Paul Krugman sort of noted in his column, silence is acceptance. That's an old, old principle of contract law, but it is very, very true. The time for being silent, if there ever was one, is over. Did anyone happen to note that the budget impasse in Minnesota, and this is sort of, this ties in with it. The budget impasse in Minnesota appeared to coincidentally have been resolved at the same time that restaurateurs and bottle store owners were noting that they no longer had a ready supply of beer. What did I say once upon a time about if there's ever going to be a revolution, which I sincerely doubt, it won't happen till the cable gets turned off? I forgot the beer. No, we really did. It was there. The Minnesota restaurateurs and bottle shop owners were noting things were going sideways. Suddenly, an agreement was reached. Don't take the panaceas away from people if you want them to remain comfortably numb. Oh, do I have to? There's another bumper song. We're running out of time for bumper music, though. I got an email earlier this evening from Paul in Portland. He said, "I was listening to your show last week, and the conversation you had with Albert really got me thinking. I was listening to the two of you talking about the history of Easter Island and what not to do to the planet. I couldn't help wondering if there were some native Rapa Nuians, if that's the right word, sounds good to me, that tried to stop the environment from being ruined, tree huggers, in a sense. I wondered if most people just called them crazy or weird. I wonder if leaders said the equivalent of, 'We can't stop carving these giant heads, we lose too many jobs.' And lastly, when the cannibalism first started, were the tree huggers the first ones on the menu? Just some thoughts that have come to mind, and wondering if things really repeat themselves. Are today's tree huggers the first on the menu when things get really bad?" Yeah, tree huggers and others similarly situated, absolutely. 'Cause it's about jobs! I don't quite know how to tell you to go and find the YouTube video. It's 2 hours long. I didn't know you could put 2 hours on YouTube, but apparently you can. 2 hours long of yesterday's HB 2018 hearing in D.C. Just to hear the filth that oozes and sleazes and slimes out of the mouths of coal industry flax and hacks. But one of the nice things is that the news is going out. I'm proud to have had a hand. I told you about it last night last Friday, about how disgusted I was to see that the coal industry's lawyers at Crowell Mooring in Washington, D.C. had said that the birth defect study that shows an inescapable link between birth defects and mountaintop removal, they said the study was flawed because it didn't take into account consanguinity, which is a $10 word for a 10-cent joke, meaning that it didn't take into account for the fact that we're all a bunch of inbred hillbillies. Ken Ward at the Charleston Gazette picked up on it on his blog, Coal Tattoo, started making some calls, and you know what happened? Suddenly, after mentioning it on the show on Friday night last and blogging and mainly tweeting about it on Saturday, the little news release that said we're all inbred hillbillies disappeared. How about that? Because it got over to CARE 2. Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent me the CARE 2 story about it. It made its way over to the Atlantic bad news release of the decade or something. It made it to Mother Jones. I have submitted an op-ed to the Charleston Gazette. Whether they'll run it is another matter entirely. Worst memo of the year, inbreeding edition at the Atlantic, by Joshua Green. And you know what? The dummies of the coal industry even misspelled consanguinity. They spelled it with a Q. No kidding. But I had a hand in that, and I feel really good about it, because people are beginning to figure things out. Article over at the Huffington Post today, coal-fired power plants targeted by Sierra Club in Washington, D.C. The Sierra Club has figured out that it's not a birds and beetles issue anymore. It's a human rights issue. Metro stations in D.C. have advertisements in them that are really profound. They show smoke-belching coal-fired power plants in the background of neighborhoods bearing the caption, "Your local coal-burning power plant has a new filter." And then the next photo down it shows a pretty little girl, and it says, "Her name is Mia." And there are several of them. "Your local coal-burning power plant has a new filter." And it's a picture of a little infant boy with an asthma inhaler in his mouth, and it says, "His name is Danny." And that is the truth! We are walking filters for coal filth. And it kills. So sometimes it's nice to see larger operations, larger organizations, figuring this stuff out. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome back, Mr. Kincaid.
Well, thank you, David.
Yes, now we can go back to watching the juggling of the Pandora boxes. And these latches are rusty, and the lids are very loose, and there are forces banging up against them every second.
Yeah, and if one of those things busts open,
well,
they're leaking as it is, David.
Yeah, exactly. They're leaking, and I was thinking the best way, and this is the problem that a lot of people on the left don't understand. Nobody's paying attention to the debt ceiling except the wonks and the political junkies and just some people who are completely bored out of their minds and like to follow something as complicated and as basically, what we're watching is Inception mixed with Kabuki theater. But see, the problem is people would follow the debt ceiling if it involved modern chic vampires in Louisiana, they would follow that. But
absolutely, in their millions.
It has no elements of that. And I just got a few other stories since we talked about the debt ceiling. And
You did mention True Blood there. I have to throw this in before you jump into your other stories, David. I love the quip of the attendant at the movie theater in Orange County, California last night. Did you see this?
Yeah, I heard about this with
one. Yeah, one lone reporter slash critic sat in the movie theater in heavily repiglicking Orange County, California, to watch the Orange County premiere of the curiously named the Palin docudrama, The Undefeated. One person. And the theater attendant leaned over to the reporter and said, "Why aren't you next door watching Harry Potter like everybody else?" That's what I thought of when you mentioned True Blood.
Yeah, and I thought that was an interesting take on the whole movie. But the thing that I would say for people who are laughing at Sarah Palin to understand this, it's trial and error, and the ones who are laughing the hardest are the ones putting this propaganda out. Remember that.
Oh yeah.
But the story that I wanted to talk about that nobody seemed to hit upon in the news, which I think is disturbing, or rather the mainstream news, because it still is an ongoing story, and I talked to it. It involves computer hacking, and it involves this guy who hacked into the Florida database, and I decided to have a basic little conversation with him, and I asked him how easy it was. He said it was pretty much a breeze. Everything was on one server. He showed me the logins, the poll workers' names, the algorithm code.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I'll send you a link to it. All this stuff goes up on Pastebin, and I mean, these are the new wars, people. These are the new wars, and when I tell you something like that, you need to understand this. All of the websites were on one server, so someone could just log in instantly, and they could go. He said, "I only posted a sliver, but I had the entire Florida database." I was like, "Holy crap! You had the entire Florida database?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then he said, "So they released a press release. Florida released a press release, and they said we are well aware of the security issues, and we have somebody working on it." And then he wrote back on his on his Twitter feed. He says, "That's funny because I just hacked it again." So basically, what's happening is the fact. But it's not the most interesting thing. He says, if somebody wants to do some detective work and wants to be an investigator, he said the one route, your basic evidence for all of this being a complete rigging job, he said, would be to go to the developer's history, and I thought that was interesting. He said, follow the developer and see what his history is, see what he's been involved with, see why he was recruited to bring that site up, and you know, it was just crazy looking at all the login names, looking at all they had all the names of the poll workers, they had the passwords, they had everything. And they didn't change one of those people. They didn't change one of those. They just pretended and said, "Well, the security issue is we've gotten this taken care of."
Nothing to see. These are not the droids you're looking for.
And that's why a lot of people who are progressive, who are laughing about the Republicans having such a hard time in the election. Well, it goes back to what I said. You don't even know who stole during the Tea Party races, do you? Nobody wants to talk about that because they're afraid, oh, we're going to have a tinfoil hat on our heads. Well, you look in a lot of districts and you say, okay, what's the probability that everyone stayed home? Really? Really? So all of these districts, everyone just stayed home. You know what? Somehow I don't think that. Because there's always, you're always going to get the diehard core out there, what I call. The diehard core that just loves to go to the elections or just believes it's their duty to go to the elections. And I just don't believe everyone just said, you know what? Maybe in some districts, maybe in some counties, but not everywhere. They punked you, people. They punked you.
You know, we may yet find
I mean, and here's
no,
the
there,
thing.
But there are other elections that are that way too, David.
I understand that, but
where
thing,
no, where you look up mean. And you go, wait a minute, this shouldn't have been this close. Even elections where our side allegedly won.
Oh, exactly. You know, the Saxby race in Georgia, that was an obvious one.
Yep.
Well, obviously the big elections, the Gore and the Kerry, I would say, I wouldn't be surprised how, with the court, with the judge, Wisconsin race, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lot of the vote flipping over there that a lot of people couldn't investigate. I think it, this is a bigger dilemma than anyone, can fathom. And the fact probably is that system, that guy, I think he hacked into it, I think it was like less than 2 hours or something like that, maybe, to get all those login numbers.
Jesus.
but here's the thing about it. And this ties into what I was telling you about. You remember I was telling you, Bob, about LOL Sec, and this goes back to why a lot of people, why I said, I told you, you should pay attention to the anti-Sec movement that's happening right now. Because the leader, or the so-called leader of LOL Sec, has launched an anti-Sec on military sites, and he just broke into Booz Allen, and he basically said he stole 90,000 emails, which I thought was really, really crazy. But he said, in this line of work, you'd expect them to sail the seven proxies with a state-of-the-art battleship, right? Well, you may be as surprised as we were when we found out their vessel being a puny wooden barge. And they claim they took 4 gigabytes of data. And remember, this is the Booz Allen is big into the defense contract work. And they said they literally had no security wall whatsoever. So once again, you're hiring these security professionals who aren't securing your info.
But that's the way these contractors work. They do nothing for a whole lot of money.
Oh, exactly. But I mean, even their employees, they didn't secure. They're like, who cares? We just put up all this stuff, and it's personal, private information, and it could hurt us down the line if we actually had a accountable media. Well, who cares? We'll just put it up anyways. But see, that's the thing about it. The thing about it is that where we are right now is a world. And here's the thing about it. You know how everyone's getting excited, and this is what people need to understand. The fact that Murdoch is going down in flames doesn't excite me. It doesn't make me wring my hands. You want to know why?
Why is that?
Because there's 10 Murdochs and back just waiting to fill that vacuum.
You know, that's what we used to say about Don Blankenship. You know, taking down Don Blankenship, you know, doesn't mean the mountaintop removal industry goes away. But the flip side of that is that there are some people who are so evil that their evil can simply not be replicated. And, you know, now that we know, for instance, that Massey was running literally two sets of books and that they had every reason to know that they were about to kill a bunch of people, it's going to do my heart a lot of good if I eventually get to see Don Blankenship do the perp walk, even if he just gets sentenced to, you know, some club fed time at Maxwell Air Force Base or Ashland, Kentucky or somewhere. It will still be a blow for freedom. And toward that end, I think it's worthwhile, David, to dig into News Corp's dealings, because the kind of crap they were doing in England is institutional in nature.
Right.
I'm generally not one of these people who believes that harsh punishment is a deterrent to crime, because it's generally not when you're talking about poor people or, you know, folks with a rock of crack in their pocket or stupid redneck murders and things like that. We don't need to kill those people in the name of the state. Those things, you know, the death penalty was never a deterrent, and it never will be. But if you take away rich people's money, that is a deterrent. If by some miraculous means, because you know this went all the way to the top, you know, this is the same thing as Nixon. The kind of crap that News of the World was doing could not have been done without the express written consent, well, not written, but the express consent of Rupert Murdoch, or at least his sleazy son. And to that end, it's worth pursuing, and it's worth pursuing over here because there's evidence now that suggests the dirty bastards, and who among us would be surprised, were doing it in the United States as well.
Oh, I agree with that. I think a lot of people are just going to, what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to take the plea bargain and say, stop talking about this, stop doing this, stop doing that, mishmash out.
But, I mean, were you not surprised to find out that not only did Rebecca Brooks, who looks stunningly like Charles II of England, that not only did she quit, but the head of Dow Jones that runs the Wall Street Journal, that guy quit today too. That means there is some coming down the pipe here in the U.S. and it can't come quickly enough to suit me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Fox and to see what goes down with that. But I think the biggest problem though is that the whole organizations of media as a whole and the purposes that they serve and my broader point that I'm making is I've been watching a lot of progressive news shows and been looking at a lot of these organizations. And I've come to a conclusion that there is no way that they can stay in business if there is a strong incumbency of quote-unquote progressive Democrats. Nobody's going to be interested in their organizations. Nobody's going to be interested in their news. And it really is... It really is a dilemma because what it means, people, what it means is these production news teams and these news shows that offer a political opinion, they need to have a certain amount of leverage with you to keep watching, so they can keep being the evangelist and telling you what you need to know. And what's going on the latest and how bad you're getting screwed. And look who's screwing you again. And, we told you they were bad. We told you they were crooks. And then all of a sudden just tearing that down and starting it over again and then saying, we'll get them next time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening.
It may be, but I still say that the work has to be done.
Oh, I understand that from your standpoint, but from the point of where it comes across of because we don't have that funnel for money, and they understand when they
well, that's why I was asking the question of Cossack, David, about what happens when the rubes aren't there to buy the wave radios anymore, and the vacuum cleaners, and the gold, and the remedies.
Yeah, I mean they start selling Soylent Green. I think that's the next.
Hey, David, I got a roll, brother. But good to hear from you.
All right, Bob. Later.
All right, later. Pop culture correspondent and what, hacking correspondent, David? No, we won't call him that because he might get a visit from humorless people in with skinny black ties. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
This is my name's Thomas. Me in the
Jug.
Chat room as Jug.
Jug of Punch, yes indeed. Oh, I'm awful glad you called.
Yeah, I wanted to call, say, you know, I appreciated you being there for us, and I'm glad Mike Malloy allowed me to discover you. And I've loved your program ever since, and I just love the chat room.
Well, bless your heart so very much. Thank you very much. And let me just take a moment, Thomas, and extend the sympathies of the whole Horn family to you in the travails and trying times that you've had the last couple of weeks. You had a horrible and sad loss, and it was awful to hear about. But our heart goes out to you.
Yeah, it was a time for the family to come together. At least my family on both sides, we've always been close, and we always make plans together. Even renting condos down in Florida and getting together is first, second, third generation, and just being with each other. And my job was to be there for them and to kind of cheer them up that day. So it was pretty tough, but I wanted to let everybody know last week about what happened. But, it was a tough situation in Lewis County. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, th- thank you. Thank you for sharing it with us and allowing us to hopefully be part of both the expression of grief and the healing process.
I kind of had in my mind, okay, you're going to be back today. I want to just call in and say I love everybody and thank you.
Well, thank you, Thomas. Thank you very much. And thank you for all you do to help us keep going here. It's much appreciated.
I think we need to keep you around. That's for sure.
Well, I'm biased, but I tend to agree. So
it's very important. Just thank Mike Malloy for having you on the air. So
well, you know, I've always said that whether he knows it or not, and well, I've said it to him personally, but Mike's the godfather of everything that happens here.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, I was doing radio at CNN when I heard him. I'd listen to him as I drove home nights when he was at WSB. And I sort of followed him every night. I'd pick him up wherever he was. And ultimately, toward the beginning of the last decade, I started saying, you know, somebody else has got to start trying to do this besides Mike. You know, he can't carry the whole load by himself. And that's what inspired me to try to go and do my little bit at the radio station in the fifth smallest radio market in America. And then was fortuitously canned and kicked off, and you know, look what happened.
Yeah, I'm in a Fortune 500. I just kind of keep my P's and Q's and not let them know what my views are on things. And
fly under the radar, brother. Sometimes it's what you got to do.
Yeah, it was like, well, okay, I know that. So it's like I ain't gonna break any laws here, but you know, it was like I know how to take care of this thing. Okay, I can put a stop to that. My brother, my brother was a United Steels worker member. He was a shop steward. I think they lost a lot with him because when he first got to this place that he was working, the management had all the workers divided up amongst each other. They were basically off in each corner just complaining about each other. My brother finally brought them together. You get over here. Come on. What? You see them guys in my offices over there? They want you to do that. They want to split you up and have you at each other's throats. And by you letting them do that, you guys have no say here. And they'll run you ragged. And they'll split up your little small groups into more smaller groups. You guys need to stand together and come together, because that's the only power you have. And I think he was such a great teacher for them.
Well, they did. They lost a lot with him. And frankly, that movement is not one that can afford to lose leaders.
No, they can't. And I was talking to another member, and Kenny was trying to encourage her to get involved. You know, step up to the plate and actually learn how to lead and, you know, pull people together and hopefully have somebody to fill his shoes. So, thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, and have a good weekend, friend.
Bye bye.
Bye now. Thomas calling from Ohio. He lost his brother a couple of weeks back. A drunk driver going the wrong way on the highway. Heartrending, but he shared it with the Horn family and in the chat room. And you know, it's always, even under trying circumstances, it's always inspiring to see the way you all reach out to each other. I haven't done any of this, but you have made a family. And I'll tell you this much: that doesn't really happen that well under more profit-driven, commercialized situations. It just doesn't. I think you recognize how special it is. I mean, look at the Skype group that happens after Malloy goes off at midnight. That was born here of Horn listeners who wanted to keep the conversation going after they were done listening here and listening to Malloy and listening to Rick Smith. And that's an amazing thing to participate in. Absolutely amazing. Onward we go. Couple of minutes left, if you're still there. No, I guess not. So we find ourselves at the end of the program. It's awfully good to be back. I'll tell you this much. I've got some family coming in next week. I will try to be behind the microphone every night. But this is family that I only see once a year. She's the only sibling I have left. So there may be some time away required. Just family time. So just a little heads up. I'll tweet it or something to let you know one way or the other. But I'll try to be here. And she understands the necessity that I be here. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful evening. Thanks for all you do to keep all of this going. Thank you for helping out even when I wasn't on the air, because, frankly, we wouldn't have gotten back down to do the final week of the Prism series, and we wouldn't have gotten back from the Prism series yesterday had it not been for you. I mean, that is the reality of you contributing to keep the horn going. And I am so proud of what you and we accomplished. And what, Ferg did a man's work for 3 weeks. We were up at 5 o'clock every morning, and we were in bed at 11. And that all, and it was work from that period, from 5 to 11. He did a man's work. And I'm very proud of our horn intern junior grade. We may have to take the junior grade off after these 3 weeks. But thanks to you all. And have a wonderful weekend. Rick Smith is next. If you've never checked out Rick Smith, I think people like William and others will tell you that at least get his podcast if you can't listen live. If you can listen live, listen live. But if you can't, get the podcast, because he is worth it. I don't say enough about Rick. He is an amazing, amazing talent. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, who wrote a wonderful little post about, hey, is Bob ever coming back home? I love that. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox, who did so much to make all the technology at Prism work, and which will and at some point it's going to become some amazing stuff here in the nightly broadcasts as well. There's some strong back, weak mind work that needs to be done, but it'll be really cool. Thanks to Ben Birch. Ben has been pouring hours into a server move to make things go better and go more smoothly. He was working on that last night. WhiteRoseSociety.org. He never sends a bill, but when he gets help, it's awfully good that he does. If you can help, by all means, please do. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.